In part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Euromart International Food Store on Springfield and Locust in Champaign, offering 8,000 food items from Europe, South America, the Middle East, and the Orient. The Euromart hosts a cheese and olive tasting from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Coming up in just a moment or two, we're going to talk about cats and dogs with Linda Case. But first, we have to take care of a little business. This is our spring membership drive, and we're hoping to raise by the end of the week $160,000. We're closing in on $100,000 today, and we need your help to make it a good day today. Despite the rain and the chilliness outside, you could really help warm things up here at WILL, warm things up in Pledge Central with a pledge call. Make a pledge of financial support. Give us a call. Pledge that support. 217-244-9455, the number to call. And is also 244-WILL. Jack Brighton, our Director of Internet Operations, is in Pledge Central with me this afternoon. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Celeste.
What's happening?
Well, aside from the fact that it's raining cats and dogs, we have a real theme going here today.
Very good.
Yes. actually, we have a challenge from Shogi the Cat, who previously pledged $40, but will increase this to $100 if six or more cats, not cat owners, pledge $10 or more during the Cats and Dogs Hour of the Afternoon Magazine. And I want to hear what that sounds like when a cat calls and makes a pledge. So please, roust your kitty and call 217-244-9455 during this hour. If we hear from six more cats, that'll add to our pledge total from Shogi the Cat.
Okay, well, I'll holler out at my cat this afternoon here. Frisbee, if you're listening, pick up the phone, give us a call, 244-9455.
Now, I think you can actually dial the phone for the cat. That would be acceptable, and you may actually be able to talk to the phone volunteer on behalf of your cat. That would be acceptable too, I think.
Yeah.
So under the rules of this particular challenge, 244-9455 is the number to call.
Okay. Or cats, dogs, humans can also join on the internet, right?
Yeah, I think dogs would be eligible as well, although not on this challenge. But I think if we get a healthy competition going, I mean, it's a sort of a natural thing for cats and dogs to want to outdo each other. So are we beating this to death yet? I don't know. 217-244-9455. And of course, what you're really doing is supporting WILL, the Afternoon Magazine, all the great programs that Celeste Quinn hosts on the show every day of every week of every year for a while now. This is something that this community has grown to depend upon, and we depend upon you to keep it going. So don't let us down. Give us a call. 217-244-9455.
We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. So, okay, cats, pull out your credit cards. Give us a call. 217-244-9455. Thanks. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Today, we'll talk about the behavior of our four-legged domestic companions, the cat and the dog. We'll also get some advice about keeping them hearty and healthy. I welcome your telephone calls on cats and dogs for Linda Case. She's the author of three books and at work on a fourth. One deals with cat behavior, nutrition, and health. Another does the same for the dog. The third is a book about nutrition for cats and dogs written for professionals. Here are the phone numbers to talk to Linda in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Linda Case coordinates the undergraduate companion animal program and teaches companion animal science in the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Illinois. She also owns the Autumn Gold Dog Training Center in Mahomet. Her books include these titles, The Dog, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health, and The Cat, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health. They are published by Iowa State University Press. And she is at work on another book, the working title, Conditional Love, Paradoxes of Our Relationships with Man's Best Friend. 333-9455, that's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Linda, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for
afternoon.
Having me again, Celeste.
How are you, and how are the cats and dogs at home?
They are all happy and healthy and happy that it's spring, just as we are.
And they get along fine.
Oh, yes, yes. They're all good pals. Our youngest, Vinny, the Brittany who we've spoken of before, does still torment the cats somewhat, but they're quite used to it, and I think actually they instigate a lot of it. So.
Now, how old is Vinny at this point?
He just turned 1 year old.
Wow, so he's still got a lot of puppy in him.
Oh, yes, he's still very much a baby.
Yeah. Well, what kind of advice do you have for adding a companion animal, you know, into the mix at home that you already have? If you have a cat, adding a dog or adding another cat, you know.
Sure.
Any of those combinations.
Right. Well, there are some species differences, definitely, and also some age differences. It would differ, you know, if you're introducing a puppy compared with an adult dog. When we introduce a puppy, we're very careful of a few things. One is that many people don't realize that it's really not normal for adult dogs to accept an unknown puppy readily into their pack. And, you know, they didn't, you know, give birth to that puppy, so they have no reason really to instantly bond or to even show appropriate adult behavior to a puppy. We consider it a good thing when they do, but we don't expect it. So when we introduce a puppy, we're very, very careful about interactions with our adults, because we don't want the adults being put in a position where they feel they have to severely reprimand a new puppy and frighten a new puppy, because that can be traumatic for the puppy, and it's also traumatic for the adult dogs. You know, if we think about what we teach dogs throughout their lives, we teach them, you know, don't be aggressive, don't lift your lip, don't ever make a growly noise. And now suddenly you bring a young puppy in, and, you know, this adult dog is doing oftentimes appropriate behaviors, maybe not, but they're showing aggression. And from their point of view, those have been behaviors that have either been reprimanded or at least inhibited throughout their adult life. So it puts adults in a really precarious position a lot of the time, as far as they're very, you know, to use a human term, they're very conflicted. You know, they want to reprimand this little puppy, but they feel like they shouldn't. And so we look at it that, you know, we very carefully supervise those situations and very slowly introduce a puppy. And when we're comfortable that the adults have accepted that puppy as part of the group and are going to be completely appropriate with the puppy, then we'll start to allow more interactions, as you know, such as play. And we're also very careful about possessions, about resource guarding with our adults. All of those rules would certainly be the same if you were introducing an adult dog, but then you have to consider adult behaviors in addition to, you know, the whole puppy adult thing.
Yeah. Now, is the crate part of the process for putting animals together, for, you know, and under the careful observation of human adults?
Sure. And actually, I'm glad you brought crates up, because crates, in my view, are a useful tool. But unfortunately, they're very overused in the pet owning public, and by overused I mean, you know, oftentimes they're used as dog containment vessels, and, you know, a dog who's crated, you know, all day while their guardian's at work, and then comes out for a few hours and then it's crated overnight. You know, sometimes we'll get forms into our profiles into Autumn Gold that when we count up the hours, we notice dogs are spending, you know, 18 hours a day in a crate. So for that reason, we're very cautious about recommending crates. They're very good tools for young puppies, for helping with house training. They're not the only thing you should use for house training, certainly, but they are helpful. They're also helpful in protecting the puppy. If you know, puppies, again, are often not completely aware of an adult's signals, so we want to be careful, again, that their interactions with our adults are very well supervised. So if we can't supervise the puppy, of course, he or she is in the crate. But our goal is to use that crate only as long as we need it, and then eventually the dog is completely integrated into the home. They're free in the house when you're not home, you know, and that they're reliable in that way.
Yeah, but the crate can offer a place of protection.
Sure.
For the animal. Now, how long does this period of transition take if you're putting a dog into a situation where there is a dog or dogs?
Well, it really depends on the individuals. You know, just like people, every dog's an individual. You know, there are many dogs who love other dogs, are very, very easygoing, very, very open to new relationships, if you will. And in those cases, you know, the transition can be quite fast. In others, we actually lived with a dog for many years who was highly dog aggressive. He was a golden retriever, believe it or not, and he was wonderful with his pack, but he was highly aggressive with dogs he didn't know. And we took great care when we introduced puppies with him, and he became very good friends with every puppy that was introduced. Mm-hmm. We just had to be very, very careful. And with him, his name was Sparks. With Sparks, basically, we used to kind of laugh when they kind of made that transition from looking like a fluffy little puppy to looking like an adolescent. He seemed to suddenly think, okay, they're a dog now. You know, I don't have to kill them anymore. So again, I think, you know, he's an extreme case of taking care, because he was he wasn't real tolerant of other dogs. But in most cases, I think you can do it in a few months.
Yeah. And what about cats, putting a new cat
sure
into
the
home?
The thing to keep in mind with cats, that's why you do have to think of this in terms of species, is that cats are highly territorial. And oftentimes the way that's interpreted is territorial means, ooh, they're going to guard their territory, or they're always guarding against something coming into their territory, which is true in part, but a better way to think about it is that territory means an area that a cat feels secure in. And if we understand it in that context, that a cat wants their territory to stay stable and to be under their control and to actually have an idea of who's in the territory and who isn't, provides them with a feeling of security. So when we introduce another cat, that introduces great insecurity in the resident cat. So the rule of thumb is that the new cat gets very restricted access in the home, and usually what we would recommend is try and select an area that's what we call low status to the resident cat. You know, an area that he doesn't really care about. It's, you know, it's not someplace he hangs out and looks out the window. It's not a high status area, and you would choose that area, and this would be a good use of a crate. You would have initially crate the new cat. We'd even recommend putting up a baby gate so that the resident cat can smell and perhaps see this new cat in his crate in the low status area, but there's no interaction. Then we would let the resident cat's behavior tell us when we're ready to shift that criteria. And the next criteria is perhaps put the baby gate down, let the resident cat come in, maybe still not allow him to approach the crate, look at both of their behaviors. If you see a lot of posturing and hissing, you know, that's a sign they're not acclimated yet. And then over time, you would always, as much as possible, allow the resident cat as much of his territory as possible so he stays secure, and then over time you would very slowly reintegrate the new cat into that territory. The problem comes when people either do it too quickly or think, oh well, we'll just confine both of the cats, and confining the resident cat is not
okay.
A good idea.
So look toward the senior cat in the house for the signs that now I'm ready.
Sure, now I'm comfortable with this new guy. And again, you know, the only consistent thing about cats and their behavior is their inconsistencies. They are so variable. You know, some cats are highly, highly social and even welcome a housemate. Others are not and would take a long time to allow that integration.
And it's interesting you mentioned with the dogs, there are differences between individuals, and I've noticed this with cats. You know, a cat will take immediately to perhaps one cat, where the other cat, it's like, get out of here.
Yes.
Take off.
And they're very clear about that, aren't they?
I don't know what's going on. I don't know how they, you know, what the difference is.
Yes,
but I guess it's like humans, you know, there are people we take a shine to immediately, and then those we would like say, see you around.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And unfortunately, we do the choosing for our cats. So, you know, oftentimes they don't have much say in who their next house partner is going to be. We just say, here he is, he's your pal.
Yeah. Is there any way to size that situation up so that maybe you would bring home you'd take an educated guess at I think this cat would get along with the cat that's at home?
Well, I know what many shelters do, and I know Champaign County Humane Society does this, is they do ask that people bring in the resident cat and try and do some introductions at the shelter. The only problem with that is that, especially if he or she's completely a house cat and is very secure in their home, they're going to be insecure at the shelters. But it can be, you know, at least kind of a rough guide, I suppose, especially if you have a cat who's not stressed by travel and travels easily. That might be a way to check it out. But again, even two cats who spend the first month hissing at each other can and often do become very bonded partners with each other. So, you know, once that initial introduction is passed. And another thing that is important is that it's really amazing how long that can take for cats. It's not just, a couple weeks. Sometimes it can be several months, and they still eventually do bond.
Very interesting. The other day, a young woman was coming down the street, and she was walking her cat.
Good for her.
I thought,
did she have a harness?
Yeah. I thought, I wonder how she managed to do that. And I suppose it's possible if you start with them very, very young. But then again, as you mentioned, you know, the consistent thing about cats is they're inconsistent.
Sure, sure. And again, I would expect that particular cat was probably very outgoing, very social, was not, you know, stressed, obviously not stressed by going out. So again, I think that can be very individual.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. This afternoon, we're talking about the behavior of our four-legged domestic pals, the cat and the dog. And we can also talk about keeping these friends of ours hearty and healthy. Linda Case is our guest this afternoon. She coordinates the undergraduate companion animal program and teaches companion animal science in the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Illinois. She also owns the Autumn Gold Dog Training Center in Mahomet. She's the author of three books with one on the way. A couple of the titles: The Dog, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health, and The Cat, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health. My name is Celeste Quinn. Well, listeners, you can join us this afternoon. You can talk to Linda. Questions are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And we have a listener about ready to join us, so I'll just I'll stretch things out here just a little bit longer so that we can, rather than launching into a new topic, we'll get our caller on the air. Linda Case, our guest this afternoon. Her books, The Dog, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health, and The Cat, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health, published by Iowa State University Press. Let's talk with a listener now. Caller in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a question. We got a Jack Russell from the pound in Decatur last January.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great little dog and very personable and likes to cuddle, believe it or not, for a terrier. but we haven't had a lot of experience with him around other dogs. We don't know his history. He's about a year old when we got him. The few times he's been around other dogs, he doesn't respect their space, gets right up in their face, and pretty soon we have growling and teeth. And I was wondering how best to introduce him to other dogs. Would it be to take him to the Urbana Dog Park, or should we just keep him away from other dogs in general?
Sure. When you say he gets right into other dogs' face, can you describe that in greater detail?
Well, if we see a dog on the street, of course he's on our leash, but he runs up to them and pretty much puts his, you know, right into their face. He doesn't do a lot of the sniffing and things that I'd normally expect a dog to do. It's like he wants to instantly play with that dog, and the dog doesn't know our guy and vice versa.
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
I think that kind of irritates them both.
sure.
And I didn't know if there was a better way to handle that, or if maybe he needs to be around big dogs and get stepped on a few times. or something like that, which was suggested by some of our friends.
No. That's not a good suggestion. Okay. I'm trying to determine what his body language is. Mm-hmm. Would you say that his body's stiff when he's doing that? Does he kind of stiffen up all over, and is his head held high? Because Jack Russells are short. And so.
Right. He does hunker down just a little bit, but instantly he perks up and he wants to play and frolic, I guess. We haven't been able to let him do that more than a few seconds.
Sure,
so I don't know.
Sure. If he wanted to play and frolic, he would probably offer what's called a play bow. The mm-hmm. fact that he's putting his face right close to another dog's face, given that he's a Jack Russell, yeah. I'm interpreting that as typical terrier behavior, which it tends to be pretty dominant behavior. The other issue here, and this is, first of all, I think it's great that you adopted him from a shelter. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that can come up with that is that he may have been poorly socialized as a young dog, so it may have nothing to do with the fact that he's a terrier. Oftentimes, when we see dogs who had poor socialization as youngsters, it's kind of like a person who just never developed normal social skills.
Right.
They don't know how to offer correct communication postures and facial expressions, and they also don't know how to read those of other dogs. And so you're describing him, rushing right in. We call that single dog syndrome often. It's a very common thing. It's kind of like, the kid who's never learned to understand body signals.
Exactly.
So it's possible that he's being friendly, but it's equally possible that he's being more terrier-like and is kind of a little, in your face, I'm tough even though I'm, 13 pounds.
Right, exactly. Now he's not the two times we've had this happen, he's not been the one to first start growling.
Sure.
But as soon as the other dog gets a little irritated, then Jake's all over it.
Which is actually very typical of a dominant dog. What a dominant dog does is say, push this chip off my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
They often don't start the fight. They're basically doing a lot of posturing, expecting the other dog to back down. When the other dog doesn't, it leads to an altercation. Mm-hmm. Has an actual fight broken out when this happened?
No, like I said, we usually pick up the dog or pull him away and apologize to the owner and keep walking.
Embarrassed and
gone. We were at the vet once, there was a large, really large German Shepherd hanging out there, and we let them meet, and the Shepherd wasn't intimidated by Jake, and Jake was bouncing, wanting to play, and
mm-hmm.
up on his back legs, and eventually, they both started to play too rough for the waiting room, so we stopped them.
Oh, good.
Anyway,
they did play, though.
There wasn't any aggression at that point.
Sure, sure.
So I didn't know, if it was a good idea to start with larger dogs to acclimate our dog to that, or is it safer to stick with small dogs so we can pull them away? I don't know.
Well, what you might want to try, and again, one of the ways to think about dog interactions is just like people, we shouldn't expect our dogs to love every dog they meet, and so what you might want to do is find some people that you know well enough who'd be willing to use their dog as a guinea pig.
Right.
No, but since he's little, the danger's not real high. But a dog that what I would probably suggest is a dog who's very non-aggressive, but also is relatively confident, mm-hmm. because you don't want your dog basically bullying another dog.
Mm-hmm.
And large or small, I don't think matters that much, except that it is a good, you do know now that he played with a larger dog,
right.
So you might want to select a dog of that body type just because he had a good experience with it previously. Some rules of thumb are to allow them to meet on a loose lead in neutral territory. Personally, I'd say stay away from the dog park. It's about the worst place to introduce dogs who are poorly socialized because he's going to be mobbed, and that's the worst thing that could happen to him. And then also carry, if he's food motivated, carry some treats with you.
Uh-huh.
And we use a thing called redirection. When he starts to get a little revved up, you would just have him turn to you, break the interaction. And that's better than pulling him away, because if you pull him away, as you probably noticed, that can a lot of times instigate.
Makes it a little
worse,
doesn't
it? Exactly. Right. Because leash aggression is very common. Some dogs that are never aggressive at all are still aggressive on the leash because it's such a confining thing. It's mm-hmm. we call it a moving territory, and there's all kinds of issues around the leash. So pulling him away often makes the situation worse. So if you can get him to voluntarily turn away, that's a good thing. As long as the other dog's not going to take a nip at him when he does that,
Right.
And also, it sounds like you have a good feel for when the play escalates too much and to break in, you might want to attach a cue word to that, as we use settle in our house. And settle means, you know, we take a break, you guys are getting too rough, this could escalate into a fight. So you might want to introduce a word like that too. Okay. But I would try and find one or two dogs, you know, that you can allow him to become good pals with. Because what you'll notice is he'll start to recognize those dogs and he'll start to have doggy friends. And that's, you know, that's a good thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Next, we talk with a listener in Neoga on line two. Hi. Line two, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
We have a cat. We had it since it was a kitten, and it's always been so needy and whines a lot and very kind of a lot of attention and hangs around me all the time. And I am thinking of getting a dog, and I know this will be hard adjustment for this cat, and I'm wondering what you think as far as whether it would be better to get a puppy or an older dog or any type of dog, or what you think about that.
Mm-hmm. And right now, this is your only cat, your only animal companion?
Yes.
Yeah. Is he or she?
He.
And what is his name?
Chad.
So when you say he's needy, he's just a very affectionate cat? And
well, we had a cat before this one, and that cat was much more outgoing and independent. This one hangs around and whines all the time, mm-hmm. very wanting a lot of attention, which is, you know, part of it is okay if I have the time,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think when I'm busier, it doesn't get as much attention, of course, but so that's why I'm thinking if he's a little more fearful of things than our other cat was.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea of how he is around other cats or around dogs? Have you had any?
No, yeah. He's never been around any other.
He hasn't.
We got him. He was with another cat.
But he was a kitten then?
Yeah.
How old was he when you adopted him?
I think about 8 weeks.
Okay, so he's quite young. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to say. If he's a fearful cat by nature, he probably will be, you know, a little bit traumatized by you bringing a new animal in. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sounds like you want a dog rather than another cat. Is there a reason for that? Or?
Well, possibly. That's our preference, yeah.
Sure. You know, the thing with dogs and cats is there's probably less guarantee that they'll bond, you know. And so it might, as you said, it might make him a little more clingy to you. But basically, if you do want to do that, probably what I would recommend is just make sure that he has some room in the house that is just his, that this new dog will not be going to, that you spend time with him in that room to provide him with the affection he needs. You know, so that would mean dogs in another room, you're sitting with Chad in his special room and giving him lots of love and attention. So that he still gets that from you, and also what's so important for cats is that he has a safe place. You know, that he
right.
does not feel that that this dog has taken over the entire home. And then I would also, again, I'd use the same technique that we talked about with two cats. I would make sure that the dog is controlled more than Chad is, because it's Chad's house. And, you know, even if you get an adult dog, chances are the dog's going to be pretty active coming into a
right.
new home and may very well want to chase him, you know. So, and that's another thing to check for, too. If you adopt from a shelter, it would be a good idea if you're getting an adult to find a dog who's very cat tolerant, and meaning, you know, it just mm-hmm. is very mellow with cats.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be a chance that they would bond, and that might help with some of Chad's insecurities, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it's such an iffy thing with a dog and a cat. You know, they can become great, great buddies, or they can, you know, barely tolerate each other. It's hard to say.
And there's a chance if we got another cat that he might bond or he might not, too.
Yeah. You know, 8 weeks concerns me a little bit, even though it's not terribly young. Typically, research studies have shown that cats who stay with their litter up to 11 to 12 weeks are much more highly social with other cats as adults than cats who are weaned. So 8's not terribly young. If he was 6 weeks, I'd say, ooh, that's, you know, it's not terribly young, but it's certainly no guarantee he's going to accept another cat.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we're going to talk with someone obviously listening on the Internet from Maryland on line one. Hi.
Hi, thank you very much for doing this program.
Sure.
I have a question. I have a cat, and I adopted her when my aunt died. And it seems like we keep having these issues with separation anxiety whenever, you know, I might stay over my boyfriend's or I'm away for the weekend and I might have somebody come in to watch the kitties. She tends to kind of gorge. It's almost like bulimic behavior. She'll eat and then she'll leave these little conspicuous piles of vomit in places where, you know, she knows I'm going to walk. I can almost predict when this is going to happen. And I don't really know what to do to keep her from doing this because I'd like her to be able to eat whenever she wants to. So I don't want to have to, like, restrict her feeding time. And not, there's a second cat in the house also. So I just wanted to ask you some strategies on how to, you know, control the situation with her vomiting. And she also has a second habit, too, that's not too great. Unfortunately, she likes to jump in the bathtub. And she does this when there is water in the bathtub, as if I'm taking a bath. And she also does this when there's no water in the bathtub and she wants me to turn the tap on so she can take a drink. So mm-hmm. If you can make any comments, I'm going to hang up and I'll listen on the Internet. Thank you very much.
I think we've spoken before. if I remember correctly, and either I'm having a very weird deja vu sense here, I do believe you've called in the last time or two times ago with the same problem. I'm kind of sorry she hung up because I had a lot of questions for her. But I guess what I would say is just what I said last time, and that is to think about changing her food, perhaps. You didn't say whether or not she's on self-feeding when you're home. It does sound like a stress response. Another possibility is to have a house sitter. That's what we do when we're away, so that she's not isolated for that long. So again, I'm actually kind of at a loss about the bulimia thing because you're not there to ask questions.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. You're the expert, Linda. But, you know, sometimes my cat will gobble something down and then throw up.
Yeah, that's regurgitation.
Yeah.
It's not a hairball. It's not vomit.
Yeah, and it's not bulimia either.
No.
I don't think cats get that.
No, I was getting the impression she was just using that to mean instant vomiting. Yeah, yeah, she's not doing it on purpose,
so
but it could be
a stress thing. Yeah.
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
That's a way
Cats oftentimes immediately regurgitate food after they've gorged themselves. So what I would wonder is if the cat's on meal feeding when she's home and then she just puts a whole bunch of food down when she goes away, it would be very common for that cat to just gorge herself and then throw up. Exactly, and I'm glad you brought that up. It's not bulimic like we think of it. It's the cat's probably gorging herself. So that is probably what's going on. As far as the bathtub thing goes, I guess that's, to me, a problem that's not a problem. You know, many cats like to drink out of faucets. We have one, and we just turn the faucet on for her. As far as jumping in when there's water in it, maybe keep her out of the bathroom when you're taking a bath. I'm not sure that that's one that's that difficult to solve.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Linda Case is our guest this afternoon. She coordinates the undergraduate companion animal program and teaches companion animal science in the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Illinois. Listeners, you can join us with questions about your companion animals, cats and dogs, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. This, you know, this instance of cats, we've had two calls now. One, you know, a cat described as, you know, needing a lot of TLC mm-hmm. and demanding, you know, a little extra attention,
sure,
that kind of thing. And then this cat, the Maryland cat, who seems really bonded to the human and you know, his or her owner. And, you know, it gets to this idea that we have about cats, that they're independent.
Right, right.
That's really
Which
quite
is a myth.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm sure at once upon a time, way back in their history, they were independent.
Well, certainly the African wildcat, who is the primary wild ancestor of our cat, a progenitor species, is. And one of the theories of self-domestication of the cat, and I think it's a good theory, is that as the cat started to congregate in Egypt around grain bins and around farms, It was very opportunistic because, you know, grain bins bring in mice and rats. And so there, here was a nice, you know, smorgasbord for these cats. And by basically natural selection, humans had nothing to do with it at this point. The African wildcat lives a very solitary life, and actually they're so highly territorial that they, you know, they set up territories just for the purpose of staying out of each other's way. So it would follow that suddenly you have this barn that has lots of good nesting sites. It's protected, it's safe, and it has basically a plethora of food for these cats. It would follow that African wildcats, who were more social and more tolerant, so even social might be too strong a word, that were more tolerant of the presence of other cats, would be naturally selected for. Those who were not would have stayed out in the desert and continued to live as African wildcats, whereas over, you know, many generations, those who were more comfortable, if you will, with living in a group of cats would be the ones that would end up in these barns. And so that idea of self-domestication is a pretty good one, you know, and that we eventually intervened, and as we started, you know, with the cat, as we started identifying the cat with certain religious beliefs of that time, and then eventually, you know, of course, the cat became a companion as well.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 2 on a cell phone.
Hi.
Call dropped out somehow or other. Let's go next to a listener on line 1, I think, is next. Tower Hill.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a 5-year-old cat. She was 1 and 6 when I found her in a big round bale of hay. Well, I'm gone during the daytime, and I call her. I catch her in the act a lot of times. She'll make a pile, a number 2, on the floor. Her litter box will be clean and empty, and there'll be a bunch of piles on the floor.
Mm-hmm. And she's 5 years old?
Pardon me?
She's 5 years old, you said?
Yeah, she's 5 years old, about 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gone about 10, 12 hours a day. And I'd like to know, I clean her litter box out every day.
Sure. And it only happens when you're away, or does it happen when you're home also?
I caught her in the act last night.
In the middle of the night, or?
Well, about 10 o'clock.
Okay.
Her litter box is clean, and
sure.
She just goes in there and just starts messing.
There's a number. Does she use the litter box for urination?
Yeah,
she does. You're sure of that she's not?
Yeah, when I clean it out, there's it's a lot of clumps. Yeah.
Sure. Has she? Oh, okay. That would tell you. Has she ever had any? Does she have a history of having had intestinal parasites, or if she had a GI disturbance where she had some diarrhea or anything?
No, she's just an all-around healthy cat. She's,
okay. She's how long has she been? How long has she been doing this?
For about 3 to 4 months now.
Oh, not very long. And you can't. Four months ago, there was nothing that happened medical that you can identify.
No, I talked to my vet and I took her to the vet and checked her out, and he said nothing wrong. But just try putting a second litter box in there. Well, I did that, and she'd go in there, and then she'd still go around it.
She would. Well, there are a couple reasons that cats stop using the litter box. And, you know, the first that we always check, which it sounds like you did, is a medical reason. And what tends to happen is, again, because cats associate place with so much of what happens to them, is if a cat has an illness or has parasites or, you know, has a bout of diarrhea, and it's painful to them, and they are in the litter box when it happens, they oftentimes associate that with the litter box. And even after the cause is gone, even after you've, you know, solved the parasites, cured the diarrhea, that association is still there, and they don't go back to using the litter box. What oftentimes happens is when they stopped using the litter box, they develop what's called a surface preference. And what that means is they find a preference that they like to defecate on or urinate on better. And that becomes their new identified urine or defecation area. It's likely that's what's happened here. There's a couple of things you could do. One is you could play around with different litter boxes. One of the things that can work really well is to get a really big litter box. Sometimes it's a confinement issue. You can also play around with where you put the litter box, types of litters. Some cats don't like clumping litters. You might want to try just, you know, basic clay litter.
Well, I use the Arm & Hammer. That's what I've been using because of, I tried to use Tidy Cat and a few other brands, and she just would just play in it and just go somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah, you know, and the other thing that I want to mention is it is a litter box aversion, and oftentimes those two things go together. One of the things you could try is confining her to a small area, a crate. You know, I don't want it really teeny, but you want a crate that the litter box is on one end and she has enough room to move around and have some toys and, you know, and be comfortable in there. But that oftentimes, especially if it's a surface preference that she's developed, will allow her to start using the litter box again. And then what you would do is once she's consistently using the litter box in that confined area, and in your case, what you might want to do is just do it when you're not home and then, you know, let her out when you're home and see if you can watch her. And then slowly you would increase how much space she's given. From what you're describing, it sounds like, you know, a surface preference and or a litter box aversion. And usually there's some predisposing cause of that, but, you know, sometimes the guardian doesn't know what that is. You know, it could be something as simple as something scaring her when she was in the litter box and she associated it with that.
Could she be doing it because I'm not home very much?
Well, it could be stress-related. It's not as common in cats as it is in dogs, you know, to urinate or defecate in the house in response to separation issues. And the fact that she did it when you were home last night is a sign to me that it's not associated that much with you not being home. The fact that you're gone 10 to 12 hours, you're not home a lot of the time. So, you know, it might not be related to that.
Okay. All right, well, do as you say. I'll change the litter and switch around and see what happens.
Yeah, and you might want to try use a big crate and see if that helps, you know, just for a short period of time.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. We're going to wrap it up here at this point. Linda, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon and offering your advice, your sage advice to our listeners. Linda Case has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. She's the author of three books, and she's got one on the way. Books that our listeners might be interested in taking a look at include The Dog, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health, and The Cat, Its Behavior, Nutrition, and Health. They are published by Iowa State University Press. And the book that's on the way is, the working title is Conditional Love, Paradoxes of Our Relationships with Man's Best Friend. Linda coordinates the undergraduate companion animal program and teaches companion animal science in the Department of Animal Sciences at the University of Illinois. She also owns the Autumn Gold Dog Training Center in Mahomet. Linda, again, thanks, and
hope
we'll do it again.
I hope so, too.
Okay, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Let's check in now with Jack Brighton in Pledge Central. Have we heard from some cats?
Well, actually, no, we have not. We've had a challenge to hear from six cats by the end of this hour, so we still have a little bit of time left. Stogie the cat pledged $40 previously, but will increase this to $100 if six more cats call in with at least a $10 pledge during this hour of the Afternoon Magazine. Now, we did hear from a groundhog, a water buffalo, and a school of fish, so that's good, but no cats. Actually, we did have a dog call in an FM pledge. Seriously, that's true. This is the truth. I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
So anyway, the phone number to call, whether you're a cat or a water buffalo, 244-9455. I can't believe I'm getting mixed up too. 217 is the area code. If it's a long distance call for you, feel free to call collect, because we really need to get a lot of members involved in supporting this station. If you've never made a pledge before, please consider doing so now, because we know our audience has grown. We know that people leave the area, but many more have joined us as listeners. And we, because of the financial support of the station from the federal government, the state, and the university, all that has been declining and will continue to decline. We're very confident. We need to increase the base of support among listeners. So your pledge is very important during this one of two times of the year we come to you on the air. Please make that pledge call and join the Friends of WILL at the $40 basic membership level. 11 cents a day is how that kind of works out. If you want to increase that level of support, if you can afford it, that would be much appreciated. Again, the pledge number, 217-244-9455.
And if it's your time to renew your membership, this would be a great time to do it. The phone lines are open. You can do that and be on your way ever so merrily. 244-9455, the area code 217. So, Jack, Mm-hmm. When the buffalo called in and
yeah.
the school of fish,
yeah.
did you was it apparent right away that they were a school of fish or a buffalo?
Well, the water buffalo only spoke French, so we had to get an interpreter in here. That was really interesting. It was one of the most interesting calls we've had all day. The school of fish, that was they each wanted to contribute a dime, but there were 200 of them, so it really worked out just fine.
Oh, that's
it was
nice.
Yeah, we had to convert the currency, but it worked out. You know, so we will work with you. If you call us, just give us a call. We have actually several people waiting, a couple people taking calls, and two people standing by. So if you call now, you'll get right through to Rita, and then Dave Dickey is standing by. We'd like to make them busy. Again, the phone number, 217-244-9455.
And also, if you're a buffalo or a school of fish or a cat or a dog, you can pledge online and no one will know who you are, right?
Absolutely right.
WILL.UIUC.EDU. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, it's a secure website, and it's actually one of the easiest ways that you can make a contribution via credit card on our website, WILL.UIUC.EDU. On the top of every single page throughout our entire site, there is a link that says pledge, and if you click on that, you'll go right to the pledge form. So we hope you will take advantage of that as well.
Okay, and our thanks to Shogi the Cat and to everyone who's called in this afternoon, no matter what kind of animal they are. Thanks so much, Jack. We'll check in with Pledge Central later today to bring folks up on what's happening.
Thank you.
Okay, 217-244-9455, 244-WILL. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock. Settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Well, you know, if I'd had to guess somebody was going to get an animal that called in, I would have been sure that it would have been Dave Dickey or I, not you, Celeste, to call in at those numbers. But a school of fish, too. You know, and yeah, after July of this year, we probably would have known just by the ID numbers that came in, because the USAID, United States Animal Identification Program will be being put into place, and all the animals in the state will be tracked so that we can know where they are and what where they've been and track down diseases in the future. Something we can look forward to, I suppose, to listening to on the air as we discuss how that's going to come about. Let's talk a little bit about what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade today. One quick one, though. If you're listening and you're a farmer or you're in the ag audience, give us a call now and please pledge your support. The number is 217-244-9455. If you listen to Celeste's show and you're still hanging on with us, thank you very much, and you can call that number, too. Now, the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade like this for the day. May wheat down 6 cents, 386.5, the high, the low at 377.5, a settlement price at 379. They were down 6 cents. From the wire service, it says the funds were net sellers of wheat for the day. The corn and the beans, they were net buyers. So we'll have to talk to Dan Zwicker of Agrivisor Services at 6 after the hour, 2 o'clock, about what all that means. There was a little bounce, actually a pretty good bounce in the bean pit. We'll see those numbers in a moment. July wheat for the day, 394.75, the high, the low at 386.5, a settlement price at 387, down 6.25 in September futures. $4, the high, the low at 393, a settlement price there at 394, and 1/4 down 4.75. December contract, 408.5, the high, low at 401, a settlement price at 402.75, down 4.75 in the March contract, 411, the high, the low at 406, a settlement price at 406.5, down 6 cents for the day. I am not going to get through this thinking about that school of fish. May corn now, 307.5, the high, the low at 303.25, a settlement price at 304. They're unchanged on the day. July futures, 313, the high, the low at 309. Settlement 309.75, up 3/4 in the September contract, 309 the high, the low 305.5, a settlement 307, they were up 1.5. How the heck did they decide who was going to make that phone call, by the way? December corn, 305.5 the high, the low at 302.5, and a settlement at 304.5, up 2.5 cents. The March contract for the corn pit, 308.75, the high, the low at 305.5, settled 307.25, up 2.25. May futures into corn pit, 310.25, the high, the low at 308.25, the settlement price there, 309.25, up 2.25. July contract, 310, the high, the low at 307.75. July corn settled 309.25 for next year, up 2.25 in the December 05 contract, 2 years out for the contracts, 277, the high, the low at 274.5. And they settled today at 275.75. They were up 1.75. May oats, 162.5, the high, the low at 160. Settled 160.25, down 3/4. July off a half, 168.5, the high, the low at 166. Settled 1/4 above that at 166.25. From the soy complex, the nearby May beans up 12 cents for the day. Pretty good bounce, 952 the high, the low at 938, a settlement price at 947 for the day. July futures bounced off there as low as well. They actually had the most volume for the day. 947.5 the high, the low at 933, settled 944, or rather 940, up 6.5 for the day. August soybeans, 890 the high, the low at 880, settled 886.25, up 8.75. In September's, 788 the high, the low at 780, and a settlement price at $7.85 up 11.25. November futures, your new crop, 738 the high, the low at 724. November beans settled 734.5, up 13.5. The Jans were up 13.5 as well. 738 the high, the low at 726. Settlement price at 735.5. And the March contract, 732 in the bean pit for the high, the low at 719. Settled 731. They were up 13. May bean meal, 299.80 the high, the low at 295. Settled 299.10, up 460. And the July, 298 the high, the low at 293.20, settled 296.70, up 390. And the May bean oil, 31.97 the high, the low at 31.70, settled 31.87, up 22. July futures, 31.60 the high, the low at 31.28, settled 31.44, up 9 for the day. Here's Celeste Quinn with those numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, Jack Todd, thank you very much. Lean hogs finished higher today. I was just talking with Jack. Cattle finished lower, and May bellies were lower as well. April feeder cattle, 94.65, the high 94.30, the low 94.62.5, the settlement that up 7.5. May feeder cattle, 92.35, the high 91.50, the low 91.95, the settlement that down 20. August, 94.10 the high, 93.30 the low, 93.62.5 the settlement, that down 15. April live cattle, 82.70 the high, 81.80 the low, 82 even the settlement, that down 35. June, 76.90 the high, 75.65 the low, 75.67.5 the settlement, that down 125. August live cattle, 78.80 the high, 77.80 the low, 78.05 the settlement, that down 32.5. October live cattle, 79.40 the high. The low today, 78.80, finishing at 78.92.5, that down 15. May lean hogs, 71 even the high, 69.20 the low, 70.72.5 the settlement, that up 130. June, 72.25 the high, 70 even the low, 71.70 the settlement, that up 107.5. July, 71.70 the high, 69.92.5 the low, 71.40 the final price, that up 110. August lean hog, 69.15 the high, 68.05 the low, 69.10 the settlement, that up 85. And May bellies, 106.75 the high, 104.50 the low, the settlement 106.52.5, that down 32.5. The Dow is up 168 points, the NASDAQ 37 higher, the S&P 500 up 18.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone round tables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Barbara Brader from Mechanicsville, Iowa writes, Dear Dr. Science, as a New Age enthusiast, I often burn candles. Is there an easy way to get wax out of clothes?
Patchouli oil works very well, but it makes your clothing stink. Of course, so does dry cleaning. People often pay for that privilege. The reason many former and current hippies wrap themselves in Indian print sheets is because a wax blob doesn't look out of place. Plus, the fabric is so inexpensive it can be thrown away after it begins to reek. That is, if the hippie wearing it notices when it reeks.